Happy Father's Day. I think it's going to be a great day. I think God does amazing things in our lives, and I think he's going to do some amazing things this morning. So I want to, I got to figure out this iPad thing. This is not working for me. So it's Father's Day, right? And so I want to talk about dads a little bit. I want to talk specifically, I want to thank all the dads here this morning. I want to thank you for who you are, for what you do in the life of your kids. And I want to remind you that it is Father's Day. I want to remind every kid in here, which we are all kids, that you should have in some way blessed or spoiled your dad today. So far this morning, you should have done that. If you haven't done that yet, dads, look at your kids and say, what's up? Where's my stuff? Because Father's Day is all about getting stuff. So, but actually, I do want to take a minute to just thank my dad and thank all the men in my life that brought Jesus to me, because it takes a lot of people to really bring Jesus to somebody. And today, I decided to title my talk, to title my message, How My Dad Saved My Life. And I think you guys should understand what that means, how my dad saved my life, where that's coming from. And so I'm going to tell you a couple of stories this morning about how my dad saved my life. And you're going to laugh at me, and you're going to think I'm an idiot, and that's okay, because I was, am, something. So when I was 3 years old, I ran up to my dad. My dad tells me this story. I don't remember it because I was three, but my dad tells me this story. I ran up to him, and I said, Daddy, look at my new toys. Look at my new worms. You got to come see what I'm playing with. And you know, dads, like, be honest, your kids constantly are like, Daddy, look what I can do, right? And you're like, okay. So my dad walks over to the carport. We're living in Alabama. He walks over to the carport, and he sees me playing with baby rattlesnakes. I pulled them out of their nest, and I was playing with them in the carport. Now, if you know anything about rattlesnakes are pretty poisonous, especially as babies. So my dad physically saved my life. He immediately pulled me away from this situation, and he physically saved my life. I've got other stories of that. If you want to laugh at me later, I can tell you some other stories. Because my dad was there for me to physically save my life. Then when I was in ninth grade, I got really, really sick in ninth grade. I was in bed for 6 months. It was really bad. I was out of school. They actually had to bring a teacher to our house to try to help me keep up with school stuff. All I could eat was bread, and all I could drink was apple juice. Anything else would make me so physically painful. Like, I would be in severe pain. And my dad was there for me through all of that. I was in and out of the doctors, you know, getting MRIs and CAT scans and all kinds of various things. And my dad was there holding my hand as I went into these tests. My dad was there all night long, sitting with me, holding my hand while I was in pain all night long. He made that 6 months of my life bearable. The unbearable 6 months, he made bearable. That's how my dad saved my life emotionally. Fast forward a few years, I'm 16 years old, I get my driver's license, and I decide that going to church really isn't the thing that I want to do. I grew up in church, my dad's a pastor, so I was always in church, I knew stuff. I decided that going to church really wasn't going to be my thing, but my dad said, you're supposed to go to church somewhere, and so I would leave, I would say I was going to a friend's church, I would even pick up a bulletin from another church so that I could bring it home and be like, look, Dad, here's the church I went to. So technically, I guess I wasn't lying because I went to the church. Anyway, I decided I wasn't going to do church anymore. And so my dad prayed for me and talked to me over and over and over. And then I was about 18 years old. And my dad did the thing that he knew he had to do in order to save my life. That this time, in order to save my life, he had to not be there for me. He had to let me live my life and let me crash and burn. And so my dad took a job in Puerto Rico. We were living in Dallas at the time. My dad took a job to pastor a church in Puerto Rico, and I stayed in Dallas by myself and did things that I shouldn't have done and continued to do things that I shouldn't have done. And my dad tells me the story now of how he drove to Houston, Texas from Dallas because they were shipping a vehicle to Puerto Rico. And a drive that should have taken 5-6 hours took him about 10 to 12 hours. because he was stopping every hour, every 2 hours, and crying and praying to God, saying, God, save my son's life. God, be there for my son. Pull him out of the mess that he's in. And that's how my dad saved my life spiritually. He was there, and he did what God directed him to do. Now, I don't want to leave out moms, because there's a lot of fantastic moms in here. So I don't want to leave out moms, and I want to let you know that I would not be here today, I truly believe, if it wasn't for my mom. Because while I was out partying, while I was out doing stuff, my mom was in my bedroom praying for me every time, all night long, praying, God, please save my son. God, please pull him out of this. Please do whatever you have to do so that he doesn't have to do this anymore. So if you're a mom, all you moms out there, know that you have an incredible role, because I truly believe if it wasn't for my mom, I wouldn't be here today. So my dad saved my life. It's Father's Day, so let's talk about dads a little bit. My dad saved my life physically. He saved my life emotionally, and he saved my life spiritually. And so as I think about Father's Day, I decided let's look at a story in the Bible about a guy that saved his child's life, about a guy that saved his daughter's life. And so that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at this guy named Jairus. Let's pray first. Father God, thank you for today. Thank you for who you are. God, thank you for saving our lives, even when we don't realize it. You are holy. You are amazing. You are everything that we need. God, I ask that you speak through me this morning. I ask that you open the eyes and ears of our hearts this morning so that we can just receive you and receive whatever it is that you have for us. In your name we pray, amen. So we're going to look at a story about a guy named Jairus, and this is a story that if you went to church as a kid, you went to Sunday school, you heard this story, kind of, but maybe you haven't heard it as an adult too much. It's kind of a story that's in the line of other stories, right? And so I want to talk about this story for a minute. And so we're going to turn to Mark chapter 5. And we're going to start there. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. If you have a Bible, it's great. If you don't, then open up the live event and it'll be right there for you. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. It says, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was still by the lake. Now, I want everybody to understand what's going on here. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a background, a little bit of a, you know, previously on Jesus' life kind of thing. And so I want us to all just understand, why are people pressing on Jesus? Why are people gathering? Why is there a big crowd around Jesus? What's going on? And so before this happened is the famous Sermon on the Mount. Okay, it's the Matthew chapter 5 through 7. If you haven't read that, read that. It's some cool stuff. It's an opportunity that Jesus really taught people, really blessed people. And then after that, shortly after that, he went and he got in a boat. And he got in a boat with his disciples, and they were going to this place called the Decapolis. Now, the Decapolis wasn't exactly a God-fearing area of the world at the time, but Jesus wanted to go there and wanted to teach people there. And so he got into the boat with his disciples, and they're going across the Sea of Galilee. And while they're in the middle of the sea, a huge storm pounds down on them. Now, remember, the disciples, if you don't know this, were fishermen. Some of them were fishermen. They knew how to deal with water. They knew how to deal with storms. They knew how to deal with a boat in a storm, okay? And so, but this storm was so bad, it was so incredible that they were scared for their lives. They thought they were done. They thought the boat was going down and it was over, right? And so they got Jesus. Jesus was sleeping in the bottom of the boat while the boat's going crazy. But so they go down and they get Jesus and they say, Jesus, we're going to die. We need help. What's going on? Do something. And Jesus comes up on top of the boat, up to the deck of the boat, and he says, what's the matter with you guys? Where's your faith? And he says, water, waves, stand still. Wind, stand still. And everything stopped. The incredible storm that was about to kill them just stopped. And the disciples were freaked out, and the disciples didn't know what was going on. And the disciples said to themselves, who is this man? And so their faith is getting strengthened a little bit. They're understanding a little bit more about who Jesus is. So that happened. Then Jesus gets to the Decapolis. He gets to that part of the world. He gets out, he's walking around, and there's this guy that's living in a cave by a cemetery, okay? And this guy is demon-possessed. Okay, this is another famous story, a famous Sunday school story. This guy's demon-possessed, and he is incredibly strong, and he is crazy. Okay, so when I've taught this story to the teens before, I describe him as the Incredible Hulk. Okay, he is just this insane, strong, crazy guy. They've tried to chain him down because he's so dangerous, and he rips the chains up out of the ground. That's what's happening. So Jesus is walking. Jesus doesn't even go to this guy, but Jesus is walking, and this guy freaks out. Well, it's not really him, but the demons inside of him freak out. And they say, Jesus, leave us alone. We don't want to have anything to do with you. Don't destroy us. Just leave us alone. And Jesus is like, okay, what's up? The demons then say, well, just don't destroy us. Let us jump into the pigs and we'll be fine. Just leave us alone. You know, we'll leave the guy alone. And so Jesus says, fine, jump into the pigs. They jump into the pigs, 2,000 pigs, jump into the sea. They're dead. This is a famous Sunday school story about what's going on. So that happened. And then Jesus taught a little bit. Then he got back in the boat and he's heading back over. And that's where we pick this up. So that's why there's people crowding around him, because they've heard all these stories. They've heard these amazing things about this guy that heals people, about this guy that dealt with the crazy, insane Hulk guy. They've seen the fact that Jesus has healed people. They've seen everything that Jesus has done, and they're amazed, and they want to meet him. They want to see him. He's famous, right? So they crowd around him because he shows up. So that's where we're at. That's where we're at in the story. That's the timeline. So let's continue on here for another couple of verses. In verse 22, it says, then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, my little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live. So Jesus went with him. So we enter this guy, Jairus. We don't know who Jairus is. He's never been talked about before. He will never be talked about again after this story. This is all we know about this guy named Jairus, but he's part of an incredibly impactful event because of the encounter that he has with Jesus. Because he has an encounter with Jesus that shows some amazing things. And I think that through this encounter with Jesus, I think that that we can discover a little something about being a father for the dads. And we can discover a little bit about being a Christ follower for the non-dads. So I want us to listen. I want us to just pay attention to what Jairus has to say. First of all, or what Jairus does. First of all, I want to point out that Jairus has faith. Jairus has an amazing faith that we maybe don't fully understand. But I want you to follow through what he's doing. Understand what he's doing, because he's just left his daughter that's dying. He's just walked out of his house and left his daughter that's dying in hopes to get through this crazy crowd and get to Jesus, and then in hopes that Jesus will actually come with him, in hopes that Jesus will actually heal his daughter. He leaves his daughter while she's dying and gambles the fact that Jesus will actually show up, that Jesus will actually come. There's people all around Jesus. They all want to be healed. They all want to be talked to. They all want to be taught. So why Jairus? Why would Jesus come with Jairus? Because Jairus had faith. Jairus had the kind of faith that allowed him to leave his daughter and go have an encounter with Jesus. Jairus had the kind of faith that made him humble. See, Jairus was humble. Jairus got through the crowd. Somehow, we don't know how he got through the crowd. We don't know. Did he push people out of the way? Did people simply realize who he was? Whatever it was, Jairus got through the crowd. And then Jairus fell on his face at Jesus' feet. Think about that for a minute. Think about the humbling position, because Jairus was humble. So think about the humbling position it is to be down on your face at someone's feet. And everyone around you, the crowd around you, is watching you. All your friends, all your neighbors, all your coworkers are watching you. And Jairus fell on his face at Jesus' feet. That's amazing. Because Jairus was an official. Jairus was a leader. Jairus was important. Jairus could have gone to Jesus and said, "Hey, Jesus, I'm a leader around here, and my daughter's kind of sick, but, you know, I'm important. So you should come with me, you should heal my daughter, and then you can deal with all the little people." Jairus could have done that, but he didn't. He got through the crowd, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet in front of everybody. He wasn't ashamed to have that kind of faith in Jesus. He was humble in his faith. He had faith that made him humble, and he had faith that made him active. Jairus was active. Jairus didn't just sit at home waiting for Jesus to come to him. Right? He wasn't just sitting on in his lazy boy, watching whatever, and saying, "Well, you know, my daughter's sick. I prayed, so Jesus will show up. It's all good. I prayed one time. It's good." No, Jairus had the faith to say, "I'm going to go to Jesus, and I'm going to bring Jesus to my house." Jairus had the vision to say, "I'm going to go to Jesus, and I'm going to bring him to my daughter, because my daughter needs Jesus. And so I'm going to go to where Jesus is and bring him home." That's the kind of active faith that Jairus had. Now, we all have moments in our lives. Every one of us have moments in our lives when God calls us to do something, right? And you have this kind of feeling like, "I'm supposed to do something," and you can either do it or not. When we moved to Lafayette, my family and I, Colin was a couple years old, Isabel was 6 to 9 months, something like that. They were young. We moved to Lafayette, and I had a part-time job at a church. I was going to be a youth pastor at a church, part-time, paying like $500 a month. That's the job we had. We had an apartment. We moved into the apartment. I had another job, a full-time job lined up. I lost that job in a day. The apartment that we had was tied to the job that I had, which meant we lost our apartment within a day. It was crazy. But God said, "This is where I want you to be." We could have gone back to South Bend, no problems. Could have gotten my old job back. They were sad to see me go. So we could have left, but God said, "This is where I want you to be." And so we stayed, and I got another job, and we got another place to live, and everything worked out fabulously. Because God said to do something, and we did it. We were active. But there's another time in my life that I'm not so proud of. When Beth and I were dating, I used to drive her home every day. We'd hang out at my parents' house, and I would drive her home every night. And on my way back home, there was a guy standing on a corner every single night. And some of you guys have heard this story, but there was this guy standing on a corner every single night. And this one particular night, as I was driving home, I felt like God saying, "Stop and talk to this guy. Pull over and go talk to this guy." And what I said was, "I'm kind of tired. I'll talk to him later. I just want to get home and get to bed." I never, ever saw that guy again. He was there every night for months. And then he was never there again. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know why God was telling me to stop and talk to him. It doesn't matter. What does matter is I sat in my car and kept going. I didn't have the faith to stop and get out of my car and go to where Jesus was. And so I'll never know what happened. And we all face times like that. Every single one of us face times like that. When we know God's telling me to do something, and maybe it happens while we're at church, and maybe it happens while we're at work, but God's telling me to do something. Well, Jairus had the kind of faith that drove him to action, that pushed him to actually go and find Jesus and bring Jesus to his house. That's the kind of faith that Jairus had. He left his daughter and took the chance that his faith would be enough to save her. He was active. You see, just in these first couple of verses, we can already get a picture of who Jairus is. We can already see that Jairus has a faith, and he has a faith that makes him humble, and he has a faith that makes him active. We can already see that. We can see the kind of man that God has shaped Jairus to be. But it's about to get really, really hard for Jairus. It's about to get insanely hard for Jairus. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen is as they're walking through the crowd. Remember, the crowd is insane. They're pushing on Jesus. They're pushing on the disciples. It's a really big crowd, right? And they're walking through the crowd, and they're walking towards Jairus' home. And there's this woman. And there's this woman that's been sick for 12 years. And she has spent every dime she has to get better. She's been to every doctor she can go to, and nothing works. She is incredibly sick. And she knows. She has a faith that makes her active, and she knows, if I just touch Jesus' robe, I'll be okay. She knows that, and so she does that. She sneaks through the crowd. She pushes through the crowd. She gets up behind Jesus, and she touches his robe. And that's no big deal, right? She just touches his robe. But at that moment, the moment that she touched his robe, Jesus felt it. He felt the healing power of the Holy Spirit going through him, and he knew something happened, and so he stopped where he was. Remember, Jairus' daughter's dying. Jesus stopped where he was, and he turned around, and he said, "Who touched me?" And the disciples that were with him were like, "Jesus, dude, you're crazy. Everybody's touching you. They're pressing in on us. Everybody's touching you." And Jesus says, no, somebody touched me. Who touched me? And he found the woman that touched him. And he has a conversation with the woman that touched him. And while he's having that conversation, while he's having this encounter with this woman, check out what happens starting in verse 35. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus to the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher anymore?" Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid, just believe." He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep." They laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him, and he went into where the child was. He took her by the hand and said, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl stood and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Jairus is walking through the crowd with Jesus, with his daughter dying at home, and Jesus stopped to talk to somebody else, and his daughter died. And in that split moment, I can put myself in Jairus' position in that split moment, and he's thinking, why? Why didn't I just leave the house a few minutes earlier, gotten Jesus a few minutes earlier? We would have not encountered this lady. We would have gotten to my house in time, and we would have saved my daughter. Why? Why did Jesus have to stop and talk to this lady? Why? In that split moment, this is what he's thinking. And Jesus looks at him. Jesus overhears the conversation. And Jesus looks at him. And he said, "Don't be afraid. Just believe." Jairus had every reason to say, "This is crazy. What are you doing?" But you know what? Jairus was patient. Jairus stood there and listened. And he was patient. Jairus saw all of this happening. He's walking along with Jesus. He's not fighting, right? He's not beating people to get them out of the way. He's just He's just walking with Jesus, and then he gets the news that his daughter died. He missed it. He blew it. And Jesus says, don't worry. Have faith. Don't be afraid. Only believe. He was patient, and he listened to Jesus. And then they walked to the house. They continued walking. He continued walking with Jesus to the house because he was committed. He continued going because he was committed. He wasn't just going to walk away from the faith that he had that drove him to leave his house, that drove him to be humble at Jesus' feet. He wasn't just going to walk away from that faith just because some bad news came. He was committed. Jairus and Jesus and the three disciples walked into the house, and they saw all of the mourners. They saw all the people crying. They saw all of the neighbors and the people that Jairus worked with and the people that were friends with this little girl. All these people at the house crying and trying to console the family and trying to be there. And they're all sad, right? And Jesus says, what are you doing? The little girl's just asleep. Now, these people weren't stupid. These people knew what dead was. They knew what sleeping was. So they laughed at him. They laughed at Jesus, and Jesus put him outside. He made him leave. And while this is happening, Jairus is committed to the faith that drove him to go to Jesus at his feet. Jairus is committed to this. They walked into the room where the little girl was, and Jesus took her by the hand and tenderly held her hand and said, little girl, wake up. Imagine for a moment what Jesus is doing here. Those of you with kids, you know that when your kids are younger, you tenderly wake them up. You're nice to them. Now, when they're older, you use like cold ice and you use, you know, loud music or whatever you want to do. But when they're young, when they're little, you tenderly wake them up because you don't want to startle them. You care for them, right? And that's what Jesus is doing. He's tenderly waking her up. And mom and dad and the disciples that are there are amazed that this just happened. And it happened because Jairus was committed to the faith that drove him to leave his house. You see, at any moment, Jairus could have said, never mind. When he was standing in the crowd and Jesus was talking to this lady and these people came up to Jairus and said, your daughter's dead, he could have said, oh, well, it was worth a shot. Jesus, you know, there's all these other people that want you to heal them. Just go deal with them. He could have done that. He could have done that when he got home and he saw all of the people crying and all of the people mourning his daughter. And he said, I guess she really was dead. I guess she really is dead. He could have at that point said, Jesus, you know, I had hoped that maybe the guy didn't really know what he was talking about, but now that we're here, everybody's crying. Go ahead and go on, Jesus. I'm good now. I'm sad, but, you know, you can go help somebody else now. But he was committed. They walked into his daughter's room, and he saw her laying there dead. And he could have said, that's it. I don't have any more. I can't do this. Just go ahead and leave, Jesus. But he didn't do that because he was committed to the faith that drove him to leave his house and go to Jesus' feet. He was committed. He didn't have the kind of faith that when things got hard, he walked away. When things got messy, he walked away. He was committed even when it was hard. Jairus had a humbling faith that led him to action. And he was patient and committed to that faith even when it was hard. Jairus was a father that loved his daughter very much. Jairus was a dad that saved his daughter's life. From this story, we can see for ourselves what a father that seeks Jesus looks like. We can see for ourselves what a person that seeks Jesus looks like. And we can ask ourselves, is this me? Is this the faith that I have? Am I seeking Jesus? Do I believe the truths that Jesus taught me even when it's hard? Even when I'm at work and my boss is yelling at me, or even if things are hard at home and my kids left and my marriage isn't working and my finances are trashed, do I have the faith to stay committed to Jesus? Am I committed to that kind of faith? So as we close this morning, I want you to ask yourself four questions. Now, here's the deal. I don't want you to ask these questions and be like, yeah, I'm good. I want you to actually prayerfully ask these questions. Prayerfully ask these questions. Does this describe me? Question number one. Do I have a humbling faith? Do I have a humbling faith? A humbling faith allows Jesus to have the number one place in my life, even in front of others. You see, Jairus' faith drove him to get in front of everyone, the entire region, and fall on his face at Jesus' feet. Jairus' faith drove him to be vulnerable in front of everyone. A humbling faith allows me to fall on my face at Jesus' feet in front of my family. It allows me to fall on my face at Jesus' feet at work, or even around my friends. It allows me to fall on my face at Jesus' feet. Do I have a humbling faith? Question two, do I have an active faith? An active faith moves me to action. It drives me to do something. The faith motivates me enough to do the hard stuff that God's calling me to do, the uncomfortable things that God's calling me to do, the serving, the talking to your friends. You know that conversation that you're saying in your head, I need to talk to my friend about. Do I have an active faith? See, Jairus' faith drove him to leave his house and go find Jesus. He didn't wait for Jesus to come to him. Do I have an active faith? Number three, do I have a patient faith? Do I have a patient faith? Sometimes things don't go the way we want them to go, right? Like in life, sometimes things just don't go the way we want them to go. Sometimes we feel like there's a detour in our lives and we're not where we wanted to be. That if I look at my life, this isn't where I wanted to be. Sometimes we think that we know what's best and that God's timing is just not fast enough, or maybe it's too fast. Maybe God's pushing me to do stuff and I'm just not ready to do it. My timing is better, right? We think that sometimes. I guarantee when Jairus was standing in that crowd and Jesus was talking to that woman and Jairus got news that his daughter just died, I guarantee he was thinking we were too slow. Our timing just wasn't fast enough. A patient faith walks with Jesus wherever that may be, and whatever timing that may be. Do I have a patient faith? Number four, do I have a committed faith? Am I committed to my faith? Do I have a committed faith? This stuff happens in our life that throws us off balance, right? Hard stuff happens at work, at home, in our finances, with our friends. Hard stuff happens. And sometimes it happens and it's so bad that you just can't see a way out of it. You can't understand, how is this good? How is God gonna take this and turn it into something else? And sometimes that bad stuff, that hard stuff is happening and we just can't see a way out of it. And we don't understand what God can do. And so we think, well, maybe I should just say forget it. Maybe it's not worth it anymore. It's too hard, and you just want to throw in the towel. Now, I want us to be honest with ourselves for a minute. I want you guys to be honest with yourselves for a minute, because I know I can't be the only one that's ever felt that way. And you just want to give up, because it's hard. Those are the moments that commitment matters. Those are the moments that commitment matters. A committed faith sticks it out with Jesus even when things aren't going the way you want them to go. A committed faith sticks it out through the hard times and continues to have faith that somehow, even though you don't see it, even though you may not realize it, but somehow Jesus is right there with you, walking through this situation with you. Do I have a committed faith? Worship team's going to come up and they're going to lead us in a song. And as they're doing that, I want you guys just to think through. Do I have a humbling faith? Do I have an active faith? Do I have a patient faith? Do I have a committed faith? What does my faith look like? What does my faith look like? And I'm going to leave you with one closing thought before I pray. If you're a dad here this morning, make it your desire above all things, above anything else, to bring Jesus to your home. And if you're not a dad here this morning, make it your desire above all else to bring Jesus to your home. That goes for all of us. We need Jesus. That's the bottom line.